All right, so I'm going to talk about what can Alessi tell us about inflation. So it's, in a way, it's a kind of strange title, because usually cosmologists, they don't so easily associate themselves to Alessi or Alessi-related things. Why? Because part of the reason is that the community itself has a rich data in terms of CMB. So whenever they talk about inflation, say, for instance, the inflation, they always connect it to one set of data set which comes from the CMB physics. Now, however, well, this is a good philosophy. This is a good way of thinking. People have been doing this job for the past 20, 25 years. For the almost 25 years, that's what they have been doing. That's fine. But the picture is not complete. And the picture is not complete precisely because of the fact that when inflation happens, it dilutes everything. And many people, including Turner, once spoke the fact that, okay, once you inflate the universe, you have to create the baryons. Everything in the world which we see today is made up of baryons, including this desk. So you need the baryons, the desk, everything you have to create after inflation. So the fact that it connects to the LSCs, this bit, that you have to create the standard model baryons. And we also see the cold dark matter, a good fraction of matter, which is extremely weakly interactive, but it requires to provide us the formation, the structure formation. So at least we know that these two things have to be there today. And if inflation is the link, if we say that inflation is the way to create the universe, then at least it should provide these two ingredients for the current universe. Of course, we have dark energy or cosmological constant, which is a completely different beast, and I'm not going to touch that. So my concentration here is, how do I create the standard model baryons, and how do I, in a simple holistic picture, how do I connect CMB in one single package? So that's the aim. Or in other words, the aim is that I want to construct just a simple toy model example where everything from top to bottom in terms of low energy effective field theory gives you the essence of inflation as well as gives me, at the end of the day, the standard model baryons, because that's what we need. We don't need anything else other than these two ingredients. So this is the kind of theme. So one way to understand this theme is to, what if the standard model, if the inflaton itself carries the standard model charges? So that's the question you can ask yourself. If it carries the standard model charges, then you automatically get the standard model baryons. And in some extension, which I will try to, inspire, you could also get the cold dark matter within the same setup. So a very simple goal today is to get the inflaton which carries the standard model charges. So that's the challenge. For the past 20, 25 years, people have been doing inflation, and they always have been doing inflation with some effective field theory language, in an effective field theory language, with some effective scalar, which carries no charges. Most of the time, they're absolutely gauge singlet. Well, as you know that, with absolute gauge singlets, the problem is that you can do anything you like. The masses, the couplings, they just don't come from any higher physics. Unless until you know the entire theory. If you know the entire full UV complete theory, you can play around, you can do the calculation, in an effective field theory language, you would get the mass, you would get the coupling perhaps, but since here we are doing things from bottom-up approach, we really don't know what we are talking about. But that's what the game has been so far. But one good thing was the guy who really invented, or who really came up with the idea of inflation, and that is Guth's proposal. So to be honest to you, the Guth was the first person who really had thought deeply in how to connect it to particle physics. And his idea was to get inflation with this SU5 Higgs. That was his idea at the time. So that's the potential. So the idea was that at early universe, at early times, you would get locked here. You are in a false vacuum. You inflate. Eventually, you would tunnel to your true vacuum. But the immediate problem which he faced was that, okay, you're tunneling, you're inside a bubble, that's your true vacuum, outside is your false vacuum, you're inflating, the bubbles are inflating, the bubbles don't come close enough to collide with each other, and you do not reheat the universe that way. You can reheat the universe, of course, you tunnel somewhere here, you oscillate, you can reheat the universe, but the problem with such a universe would be that it would be very inhomogeneous. You won't be able to produce the homogeneity which we see today, or the isotropic form of the universe. So what you can do is to modify the picture and say that you have a fairly flat potential so that you don't have this. So the idea would be to somehow remove the bump, and you have a flat plateau. You are on this flat plateau, rolling, the field is rolling very slowly, this SU5 Higgs, and eventually you go and reheat the universe. That's a very good toy model. But the problem, immediate problem is that if you do this way, the immediate problem, even if you fine-tune your parameters in such a way that you can make this flat potential flat enough classically, but quantum mechanically or in field theory language, you immediately see that the potential gets a shape. It's very hard to maintain the flatness. And that was the problem which was addressed by Weinberg and Gould himself. So because of the gauge coupling, the potential doesn't remain flat, it gets very steep. So the problem is that even if you create initial condition for the inflation, it doesn't really help you inflating the universe. The field simply rolls down quickly, and as a result, you don't get anything out of it. So the whole point is that they wanted to get rid of the bump. So they got rid of the bump. You can always get rid of the bump just by, changing the parameters. But you immediately face that this is not sufficient. You have to do something more. So then you immediately get an idea that in order to get such a flat plateau, what you require? You require some kind of symmetry. Now, there could be some shift symmetry, but again, the problem with the shift symmetry is that, again, it is not, respected by quantum corrections. So one hope or one tool which we can possibly use here is the supersymmetry. Because we know in supersymmetry, if I invoke supersymmetry, I can keep the flatness of the potential. So that's one hint towards going towards supersymmetry. That maybe if I go towards supersymmetry, I might be able to cure this problem. That's one, the first hint. The second problem is the choice of vacuum. Now, the problem is that if you're living from low energy point of view, we don't know what's happening at high scales. That's completely uncertain for us. Now, if you're just sitting in low energy vacuum, and we just want to understand that, well, not only do we want to inflate the universe, we also want to excite the Stan model particles, Stan model degrees of freedom, then where should we end the inflation? So that's another question. Now, of course, you have two choices. One choice is that maybe the choice is something like this. Maybe with supersymmetry, I invoke supersymmetry, I keep the potential flat enough, maybe I end inflation with my Higgs expectation value, which could be my SU5, SU10, or within Stan model. Now, it turns out that within Stan model, it is quite hard, unless until you change the gravity side. If you don't change the gravity side, if you just keep the gravity side as it is, then it becomes very hard to get successful inflation with the right amount of density perturbation. So you cannot explain everything with the Stan model Higgs alone. You need something more. You can go for SU5 or SU10, but the problem immediately, what people realized way back in 90s that in order to have that, the valve has to be close to M Planck. And from effective field theory point of view, it becomes very difficult to justify if you really push the valve, you know, way up close to Planck scale. The other possibility is that what if you have a point of enhanced symmetry? Something like, so that maybe you are sitting here at low energy scales, and maybe you recover your entire Stan model gauge group, but you go away from here, you break the Stan model. See, in a way, it is just opposite. It is a kind of Higgsing mechanism, but just opposite to this diagram. So that's another alternative which you can think of. So if you end here, so maybe there is some order parameter, phi, which carries the Stan model charges. So when you go away from here, you break the Stan model gauge group spontaneously. But when you come down here, you restore it. So it's a kind of like point of enhanced symmetry you can think of.
Why don't you go away from the minimum of your effective potential?
You could be driven. That will come. That's the issue of initial condition. That you could be driven towards the point away from the minimum, and if you can. So in cosmology, there's something which we have to understand, that there's always a big if. Usually people make very strong statements that here is a strong prediction and this and that.
So
but you have to.
The lower picture, this is
sure?
Concerning the initial state, not the final one, and the upper picture also tells us where it goes to. So where does it go to?
This one. So this one goes exactly to the, you recover your entire Stan model. So as I said, that suppose if we have a order parameter, phi, which carries the Stan model charges, and if you're away from it, you break your gauge invariance, essentially. You give masses to, say, W and Z bosons and things like that. But when you come here, you recover the entire gauge group. So it's just I'm just talking various possibilities, what you can have.
It's also broken at the minimum, no?
Sorry?
The standard model,
Big
symmetry is also broken at this.
Exactly,
minimum, so
exactly.
They always have masses.
Exactly.
So what is now, you break this, you say, because you won when you...
No, here. I will come. That's the point which I will come. Depends on what scale I'm doing. It's a matter of scale. If I'm doing below, I mean, close to 100.
A little example such that we can know what you're thinking about.
Sure. I'll come to that point. So these are the two possibilities. And today I will be entertaining this possibility. And how could I embed it within just a minimal supersymmetric Stan model? So that's the kind of like challenge I have. That's the question I'm raising today.
But you're distinguishing between things that couple to the standard model relatively strongly, or
sorry,
things
you mean the inferton? I'm talking.
I mean, seriously, there are two possibilities.
Sure, there are two possibilities.
You could have something like this, a Higgs-like thing that couples to the standard Higgs.
I mean, you can have that, but the problem with that is that yes. What you're talking about, what Jim was talking about. What happens if you have singlet couples to Higgs? But the problem with that, this philosophy I have is following, that phi is an absolute gauge singlet. Now, the coupling sitting in front of it, I do not know. I put the coupling, so what cosmologists usually do is that they use this kind of couplings every time, now and then. But they never justify from this where this coupling comes. No one can justify us. They go one step further and they say that I can even produce the CMB prediction. But then at the end of the day, you ask the question, what happens if I take a different value of G? And then what would happen to my predictions? I lose my predictivity. So that's the thing which I don't like about the absolute gauge singlets. That's the problem, that you do not have the predictivity. You can make a model to satisfy it, but okay, it's just a black box. But at the end of the day, you lose your predictivity with absolute gauge singlets. So I don't want to make inflation or inflaton with absolute gauge singlets, but I want to make the entire thing with something where I have a better control. Still, I would have uncertainty, like the question which you have raised about initial conditions. So the point in cosmology is that too many uncertainties. So I just want to narrow down my uncertainty to the, you know, to the point that at least I may still have some initial condition uncertainties, that's true, but at least whatever I'm going to say next would be at least better, would have a better predictivity.
So, that's it. If if phi is a gauge doublet, say.
Then the story is different. Exactly.
That coupling is still there.
Sure, that coupling is there. I agree. I'm absolutely correct. But so far, you can do that. But so far, I mean, I do not know a very good model to build that way. But what I'm going to do, give you today is you may not have this coupling, you will not have this coupling, but the phi itself will carry the stand model charges. That's the example I will give you. Okay.
Really, part of the magnitude of the coupling is fixed then, not just by radiative corrections.
No, the Higgs.
If you had the power minus 12 or something like that, you would have to tune that.
That's going to get that from somewhere else.
You have the Higgs invisible decay. That's the only constraint if you have.
You put it in the Higgs double.
Sure.
You have that problem.
Yeah.
You can set it equal to zero, but you
always have. Which coupling? This coupling? But I'm not using phi like this way. That's the whole thing, the whole point which I'm making. I don't have this phi at all in this game. So
you're going to have you're not going to have a scalar with the quantum numbers of the standard model?
I will have. Eventually, I will have. I would have it. But I will show you, but I'm going to use slightly different phi.
Let him go.
Sure. No, the model which I will, it's nothing but the S neutron. So the inflaton which I'm going to is, I will give you three examples of inflaton. One will be in the supersymmetric context, because I've accepted the supersymmetry here, is the UDD, LLE, and NHUL. So these two carry the SU2 U1Y. These are my inflaton candidates, which I will show you how we get it. This one is something which is close to what you were telling me just now. The right-handed S neutrino. It doesn't carry, it is a gauge singlet from standard model point of view. But I have to embed it in a theory where I have SU2 U1Y times U1B minus L. The advantage of this is that I can describe everything at the renormalizable level, with the renormalizable interaction. The disadvantage of this is that I can do it not at the renormalizable level, but at a non-renormalizable level, because these operators don't arise at the renormalizable level in MSSM, given the fact that I have this R parity, that proton is, proton does not decay. So I have to avoid that. Sure, I'll come back. Okay, so before I go into this entire business, let me just explain very quickly what exactly these objects are. Now, UDD is a complicated object, so let me give you a very simple example. A simple example, in SUSY, any supersymmetric theory, especially here we are playing with the MSSM, with n equals to 1 SUSY, there's a flat direction. They always have flat directions. So within MSSM, you can construct many combinations which are gauge invariant combination. One example could be your LHU. Now, LHU is a gauge invariant operator, and it is an absolute flat direction. Now, what exactly do I mean by flat direction? What it means is that the F term and the D term vanishes. Now, how could I imagine this? So the way I can imagine it, because I can draw this on a blackboard, that you have, this is my potential, I have my L, so it's essentially S lepton. So it's just a superfield I'm talking about. So the potential is exactly flat in a perfect supersymmetric limit. But I know that supersymmetry is not an exact symmetry of nature. It is broken, it has to be broken at the TEV scale. So eventually, this flat direction will be lifted. And at least it will be lifted by the soft SUSY breaking mass term, the A term, the trilinear term which we call usually, and third, the point is that, we are saying that at low energies above TEV, I have supersymmetry, I have minimal supersymmetric stand model. But of course, it will be, there is some, it is still an effective theory. and I have to integrate out the physics, heavy physics, to get it at low energies. So there will be non-renormalizable operator. Corrections. So these are minimal corrections which I have to take into account to get the exact potential for the inferton.
So you mean by LHU, just to understand your names, mm-hmm. you mean that is a particular direction in the Higgs-Doppler
leptonso I will potential. Exactly. So I will show you.
What do you mean by your name?
So how do I really get the inferton out of here? So the way you can get the inferton is very simple. So as you said, this is my SU2 doublet. So what it means is that, imagine you are in a perfect supersymmetric limit. Then the HU and L can take exactly the same wave. And if it takes a wave, it spontaneously breaks the symmetry as well. But that's fine. We know that if you go away from its minimum, it will give masses to my gauge bosons. So this is one example of a perfect F and D flat direction. So similarly, you can think of, I cannot really draw the picture for UDD and LLE, and similarly, I cannot draw it for NHUL. But similarly, you can imagine that you can show that UDD, LLE, NHUL, these are all MSSM flat direction. In fact, within MSSM, it's a very nice paper.
What do you mean now? UDD means
up-type quark, S-quark, D-type.
Yeah, so you have now in a cubic, you have three directions, and somewhere in this direction, you have a flat direction. Okay.
I can't really draw it here. So that's. Any question? So yeah, do ask questions. So it's just a discussion session. So. Okay, so within MSSM, actually, all the flat directions were charted out, and there's a very nice paper by Mike Dine, Randall, and Thomas, who have charted out all the flat directions. There are nearly 300 of them, including when you include the families, when you include the colors, and things like that. So there are nearly 300 flat directions. But the question you may wonder, how come out of these 300 flat directions, these are the only two possibilities just within the standard model? This goes beyond the standard model, because in order to do that, I have to invoke the right-handed neutrino. So it is slightly beyond the standard model. But the advantage here is that I can do everything at the renormalizable level. But here, I can only do with non-renormalizable interactions. So the question is, out of 300, how do I get these two directions? So that's the question. OK, so let me explain that bit.
So this is in the charge sector now, your UDD.
Yeah.
But how can it be a linear combination of, U and D's have different
numbers? Sure. I'll give you an example.
A linear combination of them.
Sure, I'll give you an example. So for U alpha I, beta J, and U alpha beta gamma, K. So where your IJK is your quark family, alpha, beta, gamma is your flavor, 1, 2, 3. And in order to get this flat direction, you require I not equals to J not equals to K.
Okay. And this explains now that when this field is different from zero, you
exactly.
have, let's say, the electromagnetic symmetry bulk.
No? Perfect.
And, finally, at your minimum, this is specified.
Perfect. Exactly. Perfect. And for LLE, you can do the same thing. Li, the isospin part, it will be your so A and B is your isospin indices, runs from 1 to 2, and again IJK runs from 1 to 3. But again, in order to maintain the flatness, you require I not equals to J not equals to K. And you can show that the D term vanishes and the F term vanishes in a perfect supersymmetric limit. But as I said, that supersymmetry is broken. And so the idea would be that So the trick is that which operator really breaks?
So the question is that
at the supersymmetric limit, these are just purely flat directions. They don't have any potential. But I know that they will get eventually some potential because I have these three contributions from low energy point of view I have to take into account. The soft Suzy breaking mass term. So let's consider the effect of soft Suzy breaking mass term. The soft supersymmetry is just the mass term, m square phi square term, which will give me a potential something like this. The A term depends on the superpotential, nature of the superpotential, which lifts the flat direction. So this I have to discuss. What is the superpotential which lifts UDD, and what is the superpotential term which lifts my LLE? And then the non-renormalizable term, you can calculate from the superpotential itself. Okay? So let me discuss superpotential operator which lifts these two directions.
So these are the right-handed squats, is that right?
Exactly.
These are
just right-handed squats. Yeah. UDD. Sorry. Okay. So the funny thing about these two operators is they're unique, actually. They're unique in MSSM precisely because these are the only two operators within MSSM which are lifted by themselves. Say, for instance, the superpotential term which lifts UDD would be like by UDD square with some coupling and some scale separate where M3. Now, that's the scale at which I'm integrating out my whatever heavy physics I have. Now, if I imagine that I'm integrating all my gut physics, say SU5 or SU10, then it will be M-gut. And then the good thing is that I can calculate my lambda exactly if I know my exact theory, what I'm integrating out. And similarly, for LLE, sorry?
I'm saying well.
No, okay. No, absolutely. Of course, that depends very much how you embed gut. Say, for instance, in SU5, SU10, there could be some degeneracy. So to be honest, still I would have some uncertainty left over. And what I will argue that all the uncertainties, whatever uncertainties I would have, is still in the model, barring all the initial conditions problems and whatever early universe cosmological problems, I would still have to live with this slight uncertainty in lambda. But still it is calculable. In principle, it is calculable. And similarly for LLE, it is lifted by your dimensional 6 operator. So these are the only two operators which are lifted by dimensional 6. Now, any other operator which you take within MSSM, now they are lifted by, they are usually lifted by operators such as your, some kind of like hybrid operator. The problem with the hybrid, again, with some coupling. The problem with the hybrid operator is that, psi will be another flat direction. Say, for instance, I can give you an example with LLE. Now, LLE, so you see that there are IJK, there are three indices. Now, there is an operator which lifts LLE a slightly lower level. Also, which will be my, okay, let me give you an example of much simpler example. So LHU, the direction which we discussed on the board previously. Now, LHU can be lifted by the mu term, HU, HD term. So these are kind of like, you see that these operators are hybrid in nature. They're more than, this is a flat direction, this another flat direction. Mu term is also its own flat direction by its own, so they mix together. So they don't have the structure like this, like LLE is lifted by LLE square, and UDD is lifted by UDD square. So that's the problem, well, not the problem, that's the characteristic of all other MSSM flat directions. And again, for details, you can see this paper, a very nice paper by Diane Randall and Thomas, and also by Gargeta, Kulda, and Martin, they have meticulously worked out all the MSSM flat directions, and you can work it out for any gauge group. So what you do, the trick is that you find a monomial, which is a singlet under, say, SU3, and then you, whatever the monomial you pick up, you multiply that with SU2, and you keep building the monomials with, you know, as you enhance the gauge group. So even people have worked it out for SU5 and SU10 as well. So this is something which came from just from the earlier investigations. So now, so let's take these two examples, and I will tell you why these kind of operators are not useful for us. Now, just take this example. So you have 5, 5, 5, and you have 5, 5, 5. So 5, 6, essentially the operator is lambda 5, 6, n cube. 5, 6, m cube. Now, for the time being, let's imagine lambda is order 1. I can vary it later on as well. And let's imagine m to be, I can take m to be as big as my m Planck. Even if I take it to m Gert, I can always rescale. So just to simplify my calculation, I'm just taking this step. Okay? Now, so I have this potential from the Sock-Suzy breaking mass term. So I can calculate the A term. Now, A term is proportional to my super potential term. But the funny thing about A term is that it comes with the phases. It has positive phase and negative phase. So it is kind of like hard to draw, but it will be something like shape of a, you know, the the wine bottle, essentially, to the bottom of the wine bottle. I don't know how to draw it properly, but you can imagine that you have different phases, actually. Okay, just I'm drawing the potential. So okay, let me draw it properly. Maybe it's a better way you can draw it. So let's say you have a potential. So the potential will go sometimes up, sometimes negative, sometimes up, sometimes negative in, you know, in your 3D space. So just imagine, I mean, it's a kind of like a bottle, wine bottle shape, sort of like towards the bottom. Now, the superpotential, the non-renormalizable superpotential, what it does is that it will generate a potential. So this is proportional to my W, A term, and the non-renormalizable part will be proportional to my del W del phi. So it will be here in this case, lambda square, phi 10, m Planck 6. Okay? So the shape of the potential would be something like here. So this is phi square. So for phi 10, the shape will be much more flatter. The potential will be even more flatter. So now the question is, you have to add all these terms to get a to get an appropriate potential. Now, let's see how it comes out.
But this one has correct dimension. Is the other one?
Sorry?
The 6 over m Planck square?
So it's dimensional 4?
Yeah, this matches with dimension, yeah, as far as I can see. But the other one? Why is 6 over m Planck square?
Oh, sorry. Sorry, the m Planck cube.
No, the cube is not matching.
No, the super potential, sorry. It's a super potential. Sorry, I just. So the A term will be.
Okay, this is the potential in the opposite.
Yeah. So the A term will be just proportional to my super potential itself. So now the funny thing is, if you add all these three terms, then what you get is a very interesting coincidence you get. Now, the total potential, you can write it down. Lambda is there, m cube, because A has the dimension of mass dimension, and you have m Planck and m Planck 4. So this is your potential. So this is the least potential, I mean, lowest order potential which you can imagine. On top of that, you can add other terms as well, because even the gauge invariance allows you to add terms like UDD, like square, 4, and so on and so forth. It's just the gauge. In principle, you can have series of terms. But this is the lowest order term which you will capture in this theory. Now, the funny thing is that if you really draw the shape of the potential, so depending on M and A, now in, if you imagine that you're in a gravity-mediated Susie breaking scenarios, M is nothing but your gravity and your mass, roughly of the order of TeV. The A term is also proportional to your gravitational mass, roughly of the order of TeV. But what can happen is that, let's draw two situations when, say, A is bigger than m3/2. So then you get a potential something like this. If the A term is bigger, then you get a false minimum. So you see that in principle, even this theory has its own false minimum. And not only that, it's just at a particular valve, and that valve is below your cutoff scale because you're doing an effective field theory. So you are guaranteed that the valve you get is at below the cutoff scale. So you, in principle, you can get locked here at early universe, at early times, and you can tunnel back to here, but then immediately I would face all the old problems what Guth has described us. That you could lead a, you, I mean, you won't have a proper reheating. Even if you reheat, your universe would not be homogeneous and isotropic. And not only that, because just because you're doing the effective field theory, and as I said, that you can, in principle, add all higher order superpotential terms because your symmetry allows you. So not only this, so below your cutoff scale, you will have many, you would expect many such false minima. So as you go along the you know, your cutoff scale, you would find more and more minima, unless until you come to the scale, your cutoff scale, where you see the full theory. So what happens in the other limit when A is less than m3/2? So when A is less than m3/2, that you don't generate a minimum, false minimum, the potential gets steeper. So what happens is that you will, even if you're here, even if you're excited here, you simply roll down and you would not get enough chance to inflate the universe. So then you immediately see that what happens if I try to take my parameter in such a way that I'm in these two extreme limits. And if I do that, it means I'm trying to find a saddle point for a potential. That's what it means. Such that the first two derivatives would vanish. And then I get a simple potential, which I drew at the very beginning. This is my potential. That's the potential you get with a plateau. So now there is a big if. As I said, that in cosmology, there's always big ifs regarding the initial condition. Now if, and only if you happen to be here, then your first derivative near the point, a phi naught saddle point vanishes, the second derivative vanishes, you have the slope coming from the third derivative, which is not vanishing. So you inflate the universe with the third derivative here. It's a very flat potential. It's almost a tabletop. You come here, you reheat the universe. Your inflaton is nothing but the two candidates which I gave you, UDD and LLE.
What's the matter with the hybrid terms?
Sorry?
You were going to tell us about the problem with the hybrid terms.
Ah, okay. Good. So now the problem with the hybrid term is that you do not generate. Okay, so now you can see that in order to, so the three cases these two cases which I talked to you, that the important factor is that your A term. You see? That if A term is bigger, then you generate this kind of feature. If A term is less, you generate this kind of feature. So the crucial thing is that the A term. Now, you cannot generate the A term, non-vanishing A term, with the hybrid terms. Why? Because what happens, let's consider, it's a dynamical argument. So you had the now what happens is this, imagine if phi is your inflaton. If phi develops a large vacuum expectation value, then the psi field gets from the expectation value of the phi field, it generates a large mass for the psi field. So it goes to zero. So dynamically, the A term, which is proportional to your superpotential term, goes to zero very quickly. It cannot support you this kind of inflation. So that's the reason you pick up only two directions from the theory. But this is not enough.
Let me just come back.
Sure.
So your expectation value, that's something high, 10 to 10, not 12, I don't know. What is the height of the potential at this
point? Okay, so I'll come back to this on the details of the potential. So I have to recall some of the numbers. Okay, I think I remembered it. Okay, so I'll come back. So now the question is, fine, so far the theory has guided you to these two directions, but... Sorry? In principle, you can do that, but with this kind of hybrid term, I won't be able to do that. I would still have trouble because my A term would be vanishing.
But you can use the A term, the small A term, when you need it.
Sorry, no, I need the A term. You see that in order to get the saddle point. So that I won't be able to get. I need to do something more. That you can. I mean, you can check. It's just a simple calculation. You need more than that. But now the question is that, okay, fine. So far, just from the particle physics, you were guided by, these arguments were all coming from the particle physics side. What happens to the cosmology? Now it turns out that n equals to 6, it was just an accident that n equals to 6, essentially operator. So these are two, the operator, n equals to 6 operator turns out to be quite strange. Why? Because they can also give you the right amplitude for the density perturbations and the correct tilt in the power spectrum. So when I say that, again, I will explain you in what circumstances it does that. So this is my potential. Now, if I fix my... So you see that...
You've had to fine-tune one parameter.
Of course, I will fine-tune. I have to fine-tune this parameter, the place where I sit down. And
that's the initial condition.
That's also initial condition, but also...
One parameter for potential and one for the initial condition.
Yeah. Two parameters.
Okay.
What is the initial condition?
Sure. Let me explain.
He needs to write duration, number of defaults.
Well, that he says he gets
on. Let me come back.
You get nothing for free.
No, you get nothing from free. That's true. So the price you have to pay is the fine tuning in the parameter, which is, so for n equals to 6. Very gravitational mass. So this is the price you have to pay at the end of the day. That the A term, because if you don't have this term, you don't get a saddle point, you don't get a flat potential, you don't inflate the universe. Either you come up to this situation, or you come to this situation.
And you got accuracy, 1%?
No. It is.
1%, I'm not worried if it's a little bit...
No. So in order to get this, actually you require even more fine-tuning than one part in 10 to 5. Now, depending on how you estimate the parameter, so I can give you the parameter m square over the web phi naught square, or let's say, h square. Sorry, I think the parameter which governs you is essentially m over phi naught. Now, that has to be roughly one part in 10 to 8 in order to maintain the flatness. So that's the price, heavy price you pay. So you see, even though you struggle quite a lot to get this kind of potential, but still, it's not so easy to get inflation. Enough flatness you require to get enough e-folding of inflation and also the density perturbation. So for the scale we need, in principle you can get you have a period, because you see the potential has this, you can get eternal inflation also. So, I mean, future eternal inflation. But what you require...
This depends also on where you start.
That's true. So I told you in the beginning that there is a big if, that there's always this big if will always be there. No, this fine-tuning is in the potential side. That fine-tuning...
This phi zero is also...
This is just the potential. I mean, it's just the kinematical factor I'm talking about. There is a dynamical factor, which we don't know.
Now, what I don't understand is, to get this number, you need to this number is tuned.
Oh, no, but phi naught, sure. But phi naught is fixed by your model, the parameter, m phi, m Planck, 1 over 3. From the model, it gives you phi naught. So phi naught is not arbitrary. I cannot choose arbitrary phi naught.
I just don't understand. You fine-tune your potential.
Ah, yeah.
To get the
correct
number of people.
Not correct number of folding. It's just the shape.
Just the shape. It's in addition to the initial conditions in order to really realize this type of things.
So you have three parameters in integer.
No, yeah. I have only. You see that M Planck. I fixed this M Planck.
Sure. You have M.
No, M is motivated by my lowest skill supersymmetry. M is of the order of TeV.
It's not parameters. You have A parameter, lambda parameters. You have two parameters.
Lambda is the only parameter which I am entering to the game.
Capital A is not
right. No. Capital A is proportional to your M3 half. So if, the funny thing is that, whatever the parameter, let's not count. But the funny thing is that, if I do not choose my lowest skill supersymmetry here, it is so sensitive that I can show you the plot, that if I take my lowest skill SUSY to be, say, even 1 TeV, I do not get the right amplitude of the perturbations. So it is so sensitive to that.
So could the relation between A and M be given by some high-scale physics or theory?
Well, that's a wishful thinking. That's a wishful thinking. But so far, I do not know how to explain this. That why A is of that order, in this case, I do not know right now. But it's a wishful thinking. Maybe there is some symmetry which helps me. But right now, I do not know. Sure.
What about thermal corrections?
During inflation, all the thermal corrections are negligible. Thermal corrections will become important when you really create particles.
Not plasma.
So of course, when you so this is one example, one time model. Since this is a workshop for the non-equilibrium dynamics as well, so this is one example. Actually, you can really go into the depth and the bottom of your preheating scenarios or reheating scenarios or thermalization scenarios. Why? Because you see that when UDD develops a vacuum expectation value, it breaks spontaneously your gauge symmetry, gauge invariance, essentially. It gives masses to my gluons, my gauge bosons. They are heavy. If my gauge bosons and gluons are heavy, gaugeinos are heavy, then they will decay into my fermions, S-fermion pair. So you can actually track from here down to here, and you can exactly calculate the reheat temperature. There is no buts and there's no ifs, because you know all the interactions here. So that's the advantage. The advantage is that I can probe this, but as you have realized by now, that the price which I have to pay is the fine-tuning, which I don't know how to explain this fine-tuning.
So are you saying if you take this potential, mm-hmm. M is fixed, mm-hmm. A is fixed, mm-hmm. lambda is a free parameter?
Lambda is a free parameter, but I can calculate it from if I know my theory.
It's not free anymore.
I can give you an example.
Okay. So then you have this potential. Mm-hmm. Is it TeV energy scale?
Mm-hmm. No, more than TeV energy scale. So this, no, this energy scale is roughly
God scale. Good.
So that's the energy scale. You have more than, why? Because your wave is around 10 raised to 13, 10 raised to 14 GeV. So you get.
Mm-hmm. So you're claiming it's going to be flat, mm-hmm. and you get. Right number of effluents, mm-hmm. and you have a right amplitude of fluctuations. Mm-hmm. And this is works only if you put your initial conditions just at the end of this.
Sure.
What happens if you do it upper? It will roll over.
It will roll over, yes.
So, comment about initial conditions. Mm-hmm. It's not how it works in inflation anymore, because there is no if. The good thing about inflation is its intermediate attractor.
Yes, I can show that. I can show that as well.
So in other words, the right thing to do for your potentials, mm-hmm. take your potentials, mm-hmm. write down the equation.
No, I know that. I can do that.
Yeah.
Sure. There is an attractor. So there is an attractor, but not within this sector. So I'll explain that.
This plateau is mm-hmm. not attractive.
This plateau is an attractor. And I will show you how it comes, because I cannot just invoke something else here, because my basic is this, my theory. So what I have to do.
Well, another question is, you have to include all the directions.
Not all the directions.
You have to include
No.
Check if their masses are big or small.
I can tell you. No, I can tell you why. Listen, Lev.
No, what about axial direction? Is it flat or not?
But
mass of axions.
They're heavy.
That's flat.
Heavy, very heavy.
So it's just minimum.
It's just minimum, yeah. So let me explain you the initial condition problem. How will I explain it? And so the way I will explain it, again, the thing is that here I don't want to invoke anything else beyond MSSM. I can do it without going beyond MSSM also, but I just want to be within MSSM. Now what happens is that, as you said, that there are directions. So there's the MSSM web of inflation you can think of. There's a UDD direction, there's the LLE direction. Now what happens? Okay, suppose UDD develops a vacuum expectation value, but what happens to LLE? It's an orthogonal direction. It can also do it, it's an orthogonal, so it can also move. So you can imagine that in LLE direction, and I will come back exactly to the tractor point. Now in LLE direction, you can have, if you do not do this fine-tuning, this the fine-tuning which I was telling you, in naturally you would generate potentials like this up to your Planck web. So in order to create this initial condition for the MSSM inflation for this one, you have to have a prior phase of inflation. That's the thing which you have to have it here. And that's not so difficult to realize because, as I said, the orthogonal direction LLE can have a potential. Because coming back to Lev's point, because if I don't do it, then I don't really land up here. Because I'm just doing, you know, an effective field theory. It's just the kinematics. There's no dynamics as such in this model so far. So the dynamics will come when I have to get an initial, maybe some inflation, which could be either, if you say that maybe it could come from string theory side, or it could come from landscape, or it could come from anywhere else. But let me not go into all those issues. But if I can just invoke inflation within my MSSM at higher webs, say by the orthogonal direction which I'm taking, the orthogonal to UDD LLE direction. So this is my LLE direction, and I can be locked initially in any of these vacua in the early universe. And if I'm locked enough here, because my here the potential is large, my Hubble expansion is large, larger than...
This is what Stanford people call landscape.
No, but landscape is not anything to do with string theory. In any effective field theory, you will have it.
False minimum. You have to have some place which tunnels to this.
Exactly. So what I'm saying is that initially you could be locked in here, and there is a finite tunneling probability that you would come to here. And it's essentially, it actually realizes the Goode's original idea as well. Now the Goode's potential was something like this. Okay.
Why tunnels to the end?
Then you get a lot of...
No, you can tunnel into anywhere, of course.
A lot of questions.
No, that's the question. You can tunnel in anywhere. There's a quantum probability. So now you have to ask the question, how good my measure is, how good my probability is, that
what is a tractor?
Sorry?
What is a tractor?
So that's one way to address the issue. That's something which we have worked it out with Andrew, perhaps. Some of you know he was here, Andrew Frey. The other way you can think of is that, as you pointed out.
What is the way you worked out with?
Mm-hmm.
What is the attractor mechanism?
Okay, so now let me explain the attractor mechanism. Now, the point which Lev mentioned, what happens if you start from here at high vacuum expectation value? Now, if you were having inflation, say, in orthogonal direction, sufficiently long enough, of course, you can calculate this thing, then what would happen is that this field will have an attractor at this point precisely because of the huge friction, is the point which you mentioned. The friction is so large that in phase space for this inflaton, anywhere you are, you start with in your initial condition, phi and phi dot, there will be trajectories, late time attractor trajectories, which will behave like this.
Then it will drag you further. If you have inflation driven by Hubble, supported by another...
Well, you calculate it.
Then it will drag you further.
No, you can calculate it, because what it will do is that it will bring you to the point, but the fact which is interesting to note here is that once you come here, you hit the eternal regime, because your potential is so flat. If the potential were not flat...
I don't understand. Mm-hmm. So this blue curve here.
Sure.
So you are going there very quickly,
No, it doesn't go very quickly. It's the Hubble friction, which...
It overdamps.
But it's driven by another inflation.
Yeah, it has to be. Why otherwise not.
Why this another inflation stops when it reaches the bottom?
No, no, another inflation will not stop. It will keep on going on.
Then you will go along of this plateau while it's driven by another
piece of potential. No, again, the problem is that once you come here, you get locked precisely because there's a phase of eternal inflation. So there are regions which you always populate.
I mean, he uses the other inflation in order to have a very large Hubble parameter, much larger than its derivative phi potential. Okay. So then he has overdamped and slides only very, very slowly. That's possible in principle.
But he will find himself, not at this most rightest point.
No, but the orthogonal direction is very heavy. The orthogonal direction is very heavy. You're not moving
Lev, you can calculate it.
Just go slow.
You just calculate it. It's just a simple.
How do you know that you stop there, but not in the middle or at the end of the scale?
It's just a matter of calculation, Lev. You can do it at home.
Exactly at the starting point. It's very strongly over.
So let me very quickly go through.
Why are you not stopping?
A little slow, but still some slow.
I do not know.
The way I understand your question is why the other inflation stops when you...
No, it doesn't stop. It has its own dynamics. You have to do everything.
That's right.
You have to calculate everything. I'm summarizing here the effects.
Yeah, but the way the other inflation to stop and this one to stop.
No, no, these things we have discussed. You can do it. I mean, it's not so. It's just I'll give you the... We can discuss it. We can discuss it. So no problem. So how do I turn it on?
Press the button.
Okay. Maybe I switch it off from here. Then I quickly run through the LSC part so that it will be interesting. So the question is, so the bottom line is how you are going to detect it at LSC. Because, well, there is a possibility here you can detect it. Now, the inflaton itself is, say for instance, is UDD, for instance. Now, there is a mass range where it works. And of course, in LSC, maybe after 5 years of running, if you're optimistic enough, then what LSC will tell us is just give us some pattern for my S-quark masses. And also the other thing is that suppose if I don't see low-scale supersymmetry, if my low-scale supersymmetry is, say, slightly above, not at close to 100 GeV scale, 1 TeV or 10 TeV, I can rule out this model very easily. I wonder how... that was interesting. So let's see how. So it was your question, how much fine-tuning do I require? So this is roughly the fine-tuning parameter, delta square, which is given by some little bit complicated structure. I will not go into that. And this is roughly the spectral tilt. So depending on the mass of the inflaton, you see 100 GeV up to 2000 GeV. 2 TeV is a little bit off margin from LSC point of view. I won't be able to say anything about the theory. If the low-scale supersymmetry has 2 TeV, then I have no hope. But here, the amplitude of the perturbations and the spectral tilt, and again, you can see the mass range for the inflaton, which comes out to be, right now, the preferred value is somewhere here, I guess, 0.975 or 96, somewhere here. So it covers somewhere above 120 GeV, roughly, say, 140, 150 GeV range. You require for the masses for the S-quarks. So the question is, okay, and the other thing is that you can also take into account of all the quantum corrections here. That's the liberty here, that you know all the interactions here. You can calculate all the quantum corrections. And so the funny thing is that the two things. So the two physics we are linking here is following. The one is the scale at which we are having inflation, which is roughly close to 10 raised to 14, 10 raised to 15 GeV scale. And from there, inflation predictions and all these things matches if the mass scale is around, say, 340 GeV in this model. You get usually one number or within an error bar. But is this the mass I'm going to detect at LSC? The answer is no. Because this is the inflation is happening at a scale way up at 10 raised to 15 GeV. And I'm doing my LSC experiment, say, roughly at the scale of TeV, 100 GeV. So you can calculate here all the masses, all the couplings here, just by using your RG analysis. And then you find, so these are the mass ranges. So I've just picked up three different values to show that the mass range, within these mass ranges, I can see there's a hope that my S quarks could range. If the S quarks range within this mass range, I would have chance to refute this theory. Now, one thing we all have to keep in mind whenever we talk cosmology, the same talk will be given by someone after 20 or 30 years from now also. Because the thing in cosmology is that we will never be able to pin down what is exactly the model of inflation. That we cannot do. But what we can do is that we can rule it out. So that is the essence of this, whatever I have spoken so far. Here, I have something in hand which I can rule it out by not only from the cosmology side, if my spectral tilt becomes more and more precise after 5-6 years, that way I can handle the problem, as well as I can handle it from the LSC side also, that so I have a better control to rule this out in some sense.
But you have a free parameter. Can't you change all these numbers?
No, I cannot. As I said, that if I change my soft Susie breaking mass to up to 10 TeV scale, I do not produce the CMB perturbations. I just lose my, the range. And if I lose that range, then I can say, if you give me, say, 10 TeV, I cannot make it work. So with a very narrow range of scale, I can make it work. Not fine-tuned. This is not a fine-tuning. The fine-tuning was there, which I was telling you, to keep the potential flat. Yeah. But it's the parameters. So what was the whole motivation of doing it? The whole motivation to do this program, to have a low-scale supersymmetry at close to, say, TeV scale. If, say, you take split supersymmetry, it will not work. Because in split supersymmetry, the scale of supersymmetry is very high. No free parameter. There's no free parameter. I have exhausted all my free parameters.
I missed what you said before. Something was fragile. You said that if I change this, I don't have the amplitude.
The tune ones are not fixed.
No. This one.
Yes, you with all this.
Oh, if you change the tune.
Then.
I see. Yeah. So, you said you will have self-reproduction regime in the equation. Mm-hmm. Then you will have fluctuations
for the
unity.
No. I'm not in the self-reproduction regime. I have to come out. So in those regions where inflation comes to an end, then only I produce fluctuations of order 1 part in 10 raised to 5. Of course, if I'm locked in self-reproduction regime, then I cannot create the universe.
Otherwise, there is also a segment.
Yeah, slow roll.
On the right side.
Slow roll.
Which you have to avoid because there is a self-reproduction regime.
In which context you're talking about?
So you see this red dot?
Yeah.
It's probably the self-reproduction regime.
Yeah, it's not so evident in this.
You want to send it outside the horizon, otherwise fluctuations will be.
No. So I'm, of course.
It means that good working territory of this plot even smaller.
No. You didn't get the point. The point is that you have a potential which I cannot. Okay, I cannot
one
blow it.
Yes, one says yes.
We can discuss about this later on also, no problem.
340 comes from
Yatarov. So 340 comes from matching the CMB amplitude of the CMB perturbations. Delta rho over rho. But this I don't detect this number. I detect something which is through my RG flow analysis. Okay, so not only that, I'll just show you one plot because we are running out of time. You can also get a handle on the cool dark matter. You might have seen many times M0, M-half plane, but it gives you a new handle that if the dark matter is neutralino type, then you have new benchmark points which also matches with your spectral tilt and the amplitude of the perturbations. So that's another way to kind of like rule out this model. So there are various handles. So I'm just going very quickly because we don't have much time. And then you can repeat the same calculation for this. So just let me briefly say one thing about this other case, which I didn't speak, and then I will stop. In an NHL case, usually there is in the community we have always the prejudices that we always say that neutrino is most likely Majorana type, and we do all the leptogenesis and things like that. But what if my neutrinos are Dirac? If my neutrinos are Dirac in nature, And again, the good thing is that I can falsify it from the various experiments, such as neutrino-less double beta decay experiments. I can imagine my right-handed neutrino, but in that case, I have to go beyond my standard model. I have to extend my gauge group. And this H is my 1 part in 10 raised to 12 in order to give rise to the neutrino masses, roughly of the order of 0.1 eV and so. And you can work it out similar things. I mean, and it has its own predictions, which, I mean, if someone is interested, we can discuss. But maybe let's stop it here.
Part of the motivation for this, the more rapid thermalization?
OK, part of the motivation is that I don't want to do things with gauge singlets like what people do. That's all.
OK, let me rephrase it.
Because I have a better control, I can detect it. I mean, I have it's also detectability. That's not.
Rule it out.
Anyway. Rule it out.
Does this affect the discussion of thermalization in
the universe? Sure. So coming back to the thermalization is that here you know exactly what you're doing from the top to bottom. Like, take an example. Like, Jürgen gave a very nice talk on thermalization. And the model was where he was talking about was the preheating, and maybe Lev will also talk about the preheating. It was preheating as an idea is a very beautiful idea. It can happen. But the thing is that so far, people have not embedded into a realistic model. And what I'm claiming here is that in these examples.
This is your strong opinion.
No, it's not my strong opinion. I can tell you why.
So in principle, he can have a parametric resonance after what he showed us. So in principle, he runs into the same problems of thermalization. He didn't tell us quite how it rolls down, and I guess
No, I can discuss. I can discuss that. However,
face value seem could have the same problem.
Face value. But the thing is that what people have been doing so far, and you can correct me, both of you, is that people have been doing preheating with the two scalar fields, with gauge singlets, and they put the couplings by hand. Now, how do you know that you get those couplings?
Right. So
what I'm saying is that I don't have to go into those uncertainties, and I can.
In the context of your model, there was a paper by Pelosa and.
No, but.
They claim there is a preheating in your model.
No, there is no preheating. Well, there is a preheating that we knew even before. I mean, but their paper was something different, completely different. It was nothing to do with.
Their paper is exactly in the context of preheating.
No. Because their paper has to do with Affleck dynamics. Sorry. They talk about the. It's a very nice mechanism which was discussed by Ian Affleck and Michael Dine. No. It's not in context of model. Their claim is very strong. Their claim is. Lev, we can discuss it towards the end. That's not a problem. But I can tell you what they're discussing. They're talking about that the Affleck-Dine condensate can decay non-perturbatively. But the entire argument is not correct. Why? Because the Affleck-Dine condensate carries a charge. If there is a conservation of charge, you cannot change the particle number density abruptly, or you cannot enhance the particle number density. In preheating, what you do is that you enhance the particle number density exponentially. Now, if you have a conserved charge, like U1b minus L, you cannot do that. So that mechanism does not work.
That's the scale of the curvature of the potential minimum.
Sure. So curvature of the potential is, so there are many other interesting points, is that near the potential, so let me go into the potential, M phi, now at that scale is the TeV, your Sopp-Suzy breaking mass term. And the scale of inflation is of roughly of the order of 1 to 10 GeV. So M, the mass of the inflaton, and the curvature is much bigger than the H of inflation. So one of the advantages is that, so you may ask, what happens if I have supergravity corrections or some kind of things which can go wrong at the UV side?
So
there are many uncertainties. Yeah.
But if this field rolls down, it will have tachyonic?
It will have a tachyonic preheating also. It has all the preheating which we have discussed in this paper. Same story, but now the thing is that, I do not put the couplings by hand. It is there inbuilt in the theory. Whatever you get, you get. If you get magnetic field, you get. You do not get magnetic field, you do not get. So that's the end of the story. No, but again, I will refute to that point partly because you have an extra scalar and you do not know the coupling. You can play with that coupling. You lose the predictivity. But here,
well, knows? Maybe LHC will tell us what is the invisible decay.
Sure, absolutely. So let's. So the thing is that, yeah. So absolutely. So it's the experiment which drives things. Of course, you make progress in science whenever there is an experiment. So I have set up a toy model which I can test it with LHC. That's it. Nothing more than that. Nothing less than that. It has equally bad uncertainties as any other inflation model. Any questions?
We have an organizational meeting right now for those participants.